do. Oh, hello there, everybody. Welcome to the After Show podcast. I'm Jason. That is producer Darren. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for telling all your friends about the show. And most importantly, thank you so much for leaving a 5-star review on iTunes, because a lot of you are doing it. I really, really, really appreciate it.
Everyone's doing it.
All the kids are doing it. Why shouldn't you? If your friend jumped off a bridge and gave you a 5-star review, would you do it too?
Well, absolutely.
A part of it, at least. So today we're going to do one of those behind-the-scenes podcasts, or at least in part, where Bo Burnham and LZ Fisher were in studio not long ago. They were in town as part of the Seattle International Film Festival. They were promoting Bo Burnham's new film, which he's not in. He actually directed and wrote it. It's called Eighth Grade. It's phenomenal. I really, really love this movie. It's one of my top 10 of the year. Once the movie actually comes out, we'll do a review and maybe we'll play a little bit more on the regular radio show portions of this interview. But today we played a little chunk of it when we were talking about political correctness. I want to play the entirety of that interview. It's the unedited interview. I think it's going to be interesting to those of you who are curious about Bo Burnham, who is a wildly successful...
I think he's great.
You got to put on your microphone.
I think he's great.
There you go. Wildly successful.
I forgot I turned that off.
Stand-up comic. He's very funny. I really like his stuff. We disagree politically, but his politics don't show up in his comedy nor in his movie. So that was also a bonus to this. I think he's probably... He might qualify for the biggest celebrity guest I've had on this show, at least.
You think so?
I've interviewed celebrities, just not here. Right? Who is a bigger celebrity? Celebrity. We're talking about not like
not
politicians,
politician.
Celebrities. Because I've interviewed before Taylor Swift, Christian Bale, lots of big names.
I
but
know.
Not
I,
here.
I've bumped into Kevin Bacon in this.
I didn't interview him.
Twice.
I was going to interview Ethan Hawke, but then I went on vacation instead. So that would have counted probably here as my
cool.
big one. I can't think of any celebrities. I'm sure I've definitely.
And everyone always does the celebrity interviews after I leave.
I told you he was coming in and you chose to leave. So that's kind of on you.
2:30.
Yeah, I was here.
What would I have done? Just lurked in the corner?
Oh, what's the one you lurked in the other corner for? The comic that you like. You ran the board on it.
Oh, Ed Norton?
Yeah, Ed Norton.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, his name, Jim Norton.
Jim Norton. You were there for that.
Not Ed Norton.
Yeah, Ed Norton. That would have been a very big celebrity.
Very
yes.
Cool.
You were there for Ed Jim Norton.
Yeah.
But I don't know how big he is.
Yeah, probably not Bo Burnham.
Bo Burnham is huge.
Yeah.
Bo Burnham puts out a video on YouTube
and
it gets hundreds of millions of views. So anyway, he's going to come in. We're going to play that as part of the second part of this podcast. We went rather long. I think it was like 20 or 30 minute interview with him and, again, the co-star, who actually, good for her, Elsie Fisher, she won Best Actress over at SIFF. And this
really?
Is one of her few like leading roles that she's had. She was really good. The movie is fantastic. Speaking of movies, I just got to say, so I'm saving the full review of Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom, I think it's called, for Friday. I will tell you this. Not a good movie. I thought it was awful. It was laughably bad, and I liked the last one. And I'm not saying it was a bad movie that's still enjoyable. I thought it was just not a good movie, and I didn't quite enjoy myself. However, here's a little asterisk I have for this. And by the way, I was with three other people. All of us did not like the movie. Not a single person said it was a good movie.
I'm planning on seeing it on Sunday.
I don't recommend it. The dinosaur scene's kind of cool. But just not a good movie. I was super disappointed in this. And I like the cat. I like everything about it. It was really bad. Here's the deal. The movie theater we were at had broken air conditioning, which means it wasn't on at all. And it was insanely stuffy and hot all throughout the building and the theater. And it was rough.
And it was a long movie.
It's 2 hours and 10 minutes, ugh. I think. It was really tough to sit through. But my friend in the middle of it said, I'm just going to go get food. I'll be back. Because the movie was so bad. He got an icy and that helped a little bit. But he wouldn't have left if the movie was good. He decided to leave. It just was not good. I'm so disappointed. And they kill way too many adorable dinosaurs.
Aw.
It's just, it's... It's almost indescribably bad. It was so disappointing.
I can't imagine what about it could be bad. The premise is so great.
The premise is not as good as you might think.
Okay.
The premise that they show you on the trailer is for the first 10 minutes of the
movie. I guess, yeah, the way the last one ends, why would they try again?
Yeah, and here's the deal. They end this movie clearly setting it up for like 14 other movies.
Oh.
I hope none of them get made if they're going to be as bad as this one. And the thing is, they will get made because everyone's going to go see this movie. Now, I could tell you it's the worst movie of the year. It's not that bad. It's not worst movie ever. But it's very, it's in my, if I had a top 10 of bad movies that I've seen so far, it would be in it this year. But people are still going to go see it because it's Jurassic World. It's Jurassic Park. Everyone's going to go see it. It's going to be big. And again, it looks nice. Like the CGI stuff, really well done. Again, I like what's-his-face, Chris Pratt, but he, for some reason, they gave him no charm whatsoever in this movie. He's not funny at all. It's just, and I remember him having a little bit of a wit in the last one and just not in this film at all, save the first scene that he's in. Other than that, just gone. It's just, gosh, it's just not good. It's not a good movie. And the big reveal, which has nothing to even do, like the twist, has nothing to do with the actual dinosaur part. It doesn't impact the story at all in any meaningful way. It's so lame.
Is it just a continue? Like, does it pick up where the last
this
one
is
left
where,
off?
Sort of. So it picks up several years later. The park is closed. They're allowing the dinosaurs to live, but there's a volcano that suddenly went active. And now they have to figure out whether or not they're going to save the dinosaurs to save the species. And so that's how the movie
starts.
The
species that's already gone?
The dinosaurs that are there, yeah, to resave the species that they de-extincted. They had some word, I can't remember
what it was. Can't they just de-extinct them again?
In theory. But it's not a good movie.
Okay.
I do not recommend this one. Have you seen anything else lately? Movies that I've said to see that you haven't seen? I'll tell you the movies that are out right now that you should go see if you haven't. I think you'd better enjoy Tag, honestly.
Yeah,
I'm assuming you saw Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay. You saw Deadpool 2.
No.
Oh, well, go see that.
Okay.
Go see Deadpool 2.
I don't think Ashley would be into that.
She'll be fine. Just tell her you're taking her to Jurassic Park and then bring her to Deadpool 2.
Oh, I watched Love, Simon.
Isn't that good?
It was really good.
Isn't that an adorable movie?
Yeah.
I really like Love, Simon. Anyway, by the way, Simon is not in this one.
I was hung up on that because I wanted to. I knew you liked it, and I wanted.
It was
to,
good. Again, it's not like best movie of the year material, but it's a funny, kind of adorable
it was
movie.
Well done, relatable high school movie where you believe the characters.
Yes, I really like that movie, but he's not in this new. The only people they brought back are Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt. Everybody else is new.
Oh, okay.
I like their like nerdy IT character in this. He's the only good part of that movie.
They didn't bring back the guy from New Girl or who worked in the control room.
I don't even remember him being in the last one, but there's no one from New Girl.
The kids,
Simon.
Right.
It's the same kid. He's not in it.
I know, but the other kid.
Not in it. I'm assuming they die.
Oh, okay.
Like a they didn't show you this in the first movie. He ends up getting stepped on by a T-Rex.
Oh, they die on the flight home.
Of all that, this is really bad turbulence. Yeah, it's not good. There are two cameos in it, and they're not interesting.
Okay.
And you think it's going to be more than just a cameo?
Morgan Freeman and Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. They got cut out. Yeah, so don't go see that. But I'll have the full actually rendered out review on Friday. I'm excited because today I'm talking with Dave Rubin, who I'm a huge fan of, and he's going to be in studio. We're going to play that tomorrow. But when we come back after this break, you'll hear from Elsie Fisher and Bo Burnham. So thank you guys for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, appreciate
so
it.
Did you ever think eighth grade ends up getting the big win over at SIFF, both not just for actress, but also for film?
That's what we hoped. We went into this going, if this can just this needs to land in Seattle or we're going home with it. But no, it was good. You just hope that it was nice. There were like little audience awards. So we just that's what you hope, that the film will connect with audiences. And that's all you can ever hope.
How much anxiety, because both of you as characters, but also as human beings, seem to be riddled with anxiety.
Oh,
how much of that goes into it every single time you've got a screening?
Oh, by this point, it's all right. I mean, it was a little like the first screening at Sundance was the one where I was whatever the term would be for someone nervously doing something. But then it's all right. You know, at a certain point, you just like the movie is what it is. And to go back on the only answer I've given so far. You also just like, I like the movie and I don't really care what people think. You know what I mean? At a certain level, I want people to like it, but I don't need people to like it for, you know, me to like it.
Same. Right.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. The only reason I would get anxious, like, before or after a screening is just because the Q&A. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but they make me anxious.
Oh, of course. Well, Q&As now, it's like, they're just public and like,
yeah.
A wrong answer will go viral and then the movie will be over.
Exactly.
What's the one question you get over and over and over again?
I get, why did I write a girl? What do you get?
How do you relate to Kayla?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is that, are you just, we're over those questions?
And let's answer both of them at the same time really quickly. One, two, three. Because I just sort of felt like it.
Well, let's reverse the questions then. Did he do a good job writing a female character?
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't even matter that he's a guy or Kayla's a girl. I think it's really just about who they are as people, and he did a good job of that.
Mm.
So. Did you go in, I mean, obviously it's a gendered role, but I mean, did you go in originally with the concept I'm writing to a female character, or was it just that's what happened?
It's just what happened. I was trying to write a bunch of stuff, and this sort of popped up, and then it was alive. She kind of showed up just fully formed. It's not like she showed up. She just showed up as a person who was a 13-year-old kid on the internet named Kayla that was a girl. Yeah, so I...
How much of the dialogue was from the script versus improvised in that you use terms like a lot, which is exactly how 13, 14, 15-year-olds talk. How much of that was actually written?
Pretty much all of it.
Yeah, most of it was, yeah.
So that was sort of an intentional... It's weird because it sounds legitimately organic and you cannot...
I mean, it's not like everything was done word perfect, but the script did read like, the thing about being yourself is, So like, that was the whole point. It was communicating on the page, but it was like, whatever you need to do to make this sound natural, you don't need to put the likes exactly here, but this is what we're going for. So you should be stumbling and thinking your way through this.
It was this based on you remembering what it was like, not that you're that much older, certainly significantly older than 13 years
twice,
old.
Twice as old. it was watching videos of kids online talk and that's the way they speak. It just feels true. I feel in general, not just for kids, but across the board, people are so much more articulate in movies than they are in real life, which at some point you don't want to watch people stumble around. But for this was a movie about someone failing to articulate themselves, someone wanting to sound different than they do. The sort of gulf between an idea in your head and then the thing that comes out of your mouth, which is a really bad version of it.
Yeah, it wasn't the Aaron Sorkin screenplay.
Yeah, exactly. And that stuff is cool. Like, I like that stuff. It is structured, though, and the scenes were structured and the dialogue was even structured. It was just trying to structure unstructured, trying to write people that can't speak. But it was very written.
Let's talk about the many aspects of social media and how that plays into this film. Obviously, both of you are very familiar with social media. That actually comes across in the movie. And that was something that I really enjoyed about it was beyond the movie itself, which I really liked. It was how you treated Instagram and social media in general, and that it legitimately felt like you knew what it was you were talking about versus virtually every other movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't even look like a Facebook page, and you're not using it correctly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I knew if it was like friendbook.com, we were dead. I mean, the internet means something to me. I participate on it as a user, so it was just like it's really trying to just portray it as it is, which is atmospheric, and it just exists. It doesn't need to be so essential. You know, usually the internet makes its way into movies by people being like, oh man, take a selfie of me, #blessed. It's like, no, people don't talk like this. Like, it actually works in your life way more organically and subtly. So the whole point is kind of just to have it there, not stated, not called out. Just try not to be so friggin' obvious. You know what I mean? Everything is just so obvious when teens... I don't know. It just feels like, oh, this feels like a 40-year-old guy talking about something he's never used before.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the fact that we're not on to a different social media platform that hasn't picked up since the film actually was produced is a blessing.
Yeah, I mean, we had to wait to the last, and you know, and it will be soon, and that's okay. Like, we wanted to just capture that point in time, you know?
For sure.
We wanted to capture what it meant to be at the time, you know, summer 2017. But, and the thing is, too, is like, hopefully if you do it right, it doesn't matter if it changes because the feelings are the same. It's not about the fact that it is Snapchat. It's about the fact that she's not feeling good about herself or she's looking for connection through these things. So, you know, I still connect to, I don't know, vinyl records or Walkmans and John Hughes movies. So, you know, I think this will – the point is just to be specific and accurate and not worry about whether it's, you know, timely or going to be dated. Of course it'll be dated in 10 years. Everything's dated.
But this is not a movie that you could have made necessarily outside of the last few years or so, right?
Yeah, I mean,
just
definitely.
Of the Reliance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to. Yeah, it was – yeah, I was specifically wanting to talk about a new thing to – that – we had felt, which was like, yeah, it's a different world. It's a different world. We wanted to portray that.
And it was an organic different world. I mean, you live this world certainly a little bit differently than Beau and I.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, we kind of use the internet in the same sense or just whatever. But yeah, it's definitely weird.
So what I liked about the movie, you don't necessarily wave a flag of this is what I want you to feel about the internet, and this is what you need to do. You let us decide what the positives and the negatives are, and certainly in the film, both are portrayed. There's a little bit more of the negative just because social media intends to be a little bit of that. For you, when you're looking at social media in your own life, how has it impacted you both as an actress and just as a human being?
Yeah, I mean, as an actress, I think I feel a little compelled to have a social media. Like, it's part of the gig now. If you're gonna be famous or whatever, you're kind of compelled to have an online presence, I think.
Compelled everywhere, though. I feel like non-famous people too, right?
Right, but like, especially if you are someone who has any kind of following.
Yeah.
It's weird, but you're supposed to have, you know, accounts on Instagram, and it's like, oh, now you can get verified. Ooh.
First of all, that was the biggest moment of my career when I got the blue check mark and I didn't have to ask for it.
Yeah, but literally called being verified too. If we could be just any more bold faced about what it's like trying to give you as far as serotonin.
We acknowledge that you're an important person of some regard.
Yeah,
right.
Dad, I've been verified. Yeah.
But then I find other people get verified and they've got way fewer followers than I do. And I live in that world of, well, why do they? Then it's not special anymore to me.
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm verified on Twitter, and I have, like, 1,000-something.
Well, we got to up that a little bit.
I mean, I don't really care, whatever. Okay, but, like, as a person on social media, I think it's affected, like, how I perceive myself, I guess. And it's given me a lot of social anxiety because not so much anymore, but at least when I first got into using it, I would analyze myself and other people watching me and how other people live their lives and how I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you so many superficial worries about the world, and it's just dumb.
But also, I never would have found her, and you would have never found me without
it,
too. You know what I mean? On YouTube.
We
That's
have
the crazy
things
thing.
To be, we have things to be thankful for it. But
it feels like then it just is what it is, right? And we do with it what we will.
Yeah, well, it's like the printing press. Like, you can make, you can make The Great Gatsby. You can make Mein Kampf. You know what I mean? Truly, really.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of blank. It's truly a blank page that can be like,
for sure.
It's like a great tool, and with great power comes great Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about how...
Spider-Man. Let's talk a little bit about Spider-Man.
Let's go with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
How are they going to do a new Spider-Man after the ending of the last Avengers film?
They sprinkle the dust in the suit.
They're all dead, apparently. Obviously, we know that they're coming back.
Of course. Sweet little British boy.
How will they make hundreds of billions more from the Marvel Universe if they don't bring them all back?
They got little British boys by the dozen over there.
When you make movies.
Paul Feige's got a little anyway, we won't get into it. I'm never going to work there. I don't care.
Well, so what is the end goal? You want as many people to see this movie, but it also feels like an independent film at the same time. Like you were taking advantage of millions of extra dollars that you can throw into this movie, and yet it still feels like a big film just because of
that. That's great.
So going in, did you feel any limitations as far as the budget is concerned?
No. Well, I mean,
to a point, I'm assuming.
For sure, but like the limited budget was freeing. I'm saying in terms of like, you know, we could go into it going like, we can just be weird and make whatever we want. We don't have to worry about making a ton of money back because it's relatively low. But now hopefully it seems to be connecting with people. So great. It feels great to us because people are like coming up being like, oh, it's such like a sweet, relatable movie. And I'm like, I thought it was really weird. I was like, there's some like real weird stuff in it. Like I'm saying, like, I'm glad you think it's like a sweet, good-hearted film, because I think it's pretty, there's some demented stuff.
There's
just some weird stuff too.
It is nice to have people relate to it, though. Mm-hmm. I think it's nice. Yeah.
What do you credit to the adults relating to the character as much as they have? Is it that they just see themselves in this character, or is it, again, is something unique to living in 2018?
I think it's both. Yeah, I think everyone's feeling the pressures of social media and also like the experience of being eighth grade, though now being thrown through a different prism and being magnified a different, it's still, that never changes. I mean, that experience of being that age is very, very universal. So I think people can see themselves in it. It's nice to see parents go, and I think they alternately see themselves in Kayla and the dad, you know, depending on the scene. So it's a little bit for everybody. Bring your family.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, bring...
You can bring the family.
Yeah, if they're like 13 and up, they're pretty cool. Yeah. But, you know, maybe not a 10-year-old.
Well, let's talk about one of the scenes that's a little bit more adult, I suppose, in the film. How did you navigate successfully the tone of the scene in the car where there is the potential for a sexual assault and it managed to be awkward, but also kind of funny in a weird way, but not funny, ha-ha, I'm laughing at the actual incident. Yeah. How did you go about taking on that scene?
Just trying to write it like everything, really, really with everything, just trying to do everything honestly and sensitively. And sometimes that ends up being a scene that's funny. Sometimes it's a scene that's scary or strange. The approach was always the same. I'm saying the movie does have sort of multiple tones, I think, but only because your life has multiple tones. Yeah. The approach was always just to be honest, not to be like, okay, now we're doing a comedy scene or now we're doing a serious scene. We tried to treat everything through her eyes, which was seeing everything serious. So, I mean, that's a particularly difficult scene, and that was just communicating a lot with the actors. And we had a limited amount of time, so we just kind of had to go and do it.
Yeah.
You know, we had like, I think like 3 takes of that whole scene. It's like a 6-minute scene or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it difficult, that particular scene?
I mean, not honestly, because, you know, it was just about communicating with Bo and, you know, with Daniel and knowing what it was about. It seems a lot more stressful than it was to make.
Yeah, because she does a good performance. Because her performance is good, people are like, are you okay in that scene? And it's like,
it's funny,
she's
though.
Acting.
I literally had the script, like, that's why I'm looking down all the time, because I had the script on my lap as we were doing.
Yeah, so it's like, she was not.
I was chill.
She was fine.
I was good. Yeah, I was Gucci.
Yeah,
you were good. How much of the movie was sort of like that with the limited time that you had?
Well, yeah, so since it was actual 13-year-olds playing 13-year-olds, it was only 9-hour days for the labor laws, so it was limited days. And we went up to every single end of the day. Like, we were shooting until they told us stop every single time.
Pretty much.
But, yeah, it was good. I didn't feel – there was a few days that were pretty stressful, especially when there was, like, 30 or 40. Mostly it was stressful. It was like, okay, there's 30 kids at the pool party. Please make sure they don't drown.
Yeah.
Like, okay, just, like – counting heads and making sure like kids aren't cracking their one kid like had a bag of Doritos in the pool and they exploded in like his raft. Like that's sort of the stress we were dealing with. It was very similar to like a summer camp or something.
So otherwise everyone professional when dealing with young kids?
Well, we try to make it unprofessional in terms of like the kids should just feel like not like they're showing up at a movie set and they have to be all, you know, we wanted them to be chaotic, and it was just a fun, easygoing group.
Do you have to deal with parents, or are you insulated from them?
I did. I mean, but it was very lucky. I mean, like Elsie's dad was there the whole time. He was incredible. And a lot of the parents there were just great. I was very, very worried about like quote unquote stage parents. Mm-hmm. I never really ran into it. They were all great. Most like extras' parents would come to me and be like, is he being a jerk? And I'd be like, no, nah, he's being cool. And then she'd walk away and I'd be like, he is being a jerk, but I'm not going to rat on him. Yeah. It was mom. Yeah, so it was all very – no, it was cool. I was given so many speeches by people before this, like, what are you doing working mm-hmm. with 13-year-olds? It's going to be an absolute nightmare between the kids and the parents. And it was super chill.
What's it like performing in front of dad who's on set?
I mean, I don't know. I've been acting since I was 5, and he is always the one mm-hmm. to, like, take me to this stuff. So I stopped, you know, I stopped caring.
And he's not like in Video Village. I mean, he was giving you privacy. Yeah.
He actually refuses to watch stuff because he doesn't want to get spoiled.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He read the script only once,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he just made sure I wasn't like being murdered, I guess.
Yeah,
I
that's a good, that's
like parental
baseline,
right? Yeah. That's number one.
Avoid murder.
Make sure someone doesn't get murdered on this.
Yeah.
Let's avoid the murder.
Yeah.
So now you're doing a bunch of these types of events like Seattle International Film Festival.
Mm.
You seem like you're not stressed out. And to your point, Sundance was a little bit stressful, but now it's kind of not. How do you keep it fun?
Oh, well, you try to find the local space needle wherever you are.
Right.
No. Nah, it's all fun. You know, it's great. I mean, it's like it's a privilege to be able to show something to audiences. It's like it's amazing. Like. This is not the part of my life that I have to worry about keeping fun. There's plenty of other parts that aren't fun, but going around showing your movie in a city is awesome.
Sure.
It's great.
So cool.
So I was doing some research moving into this interview, and I want to talk about something slightly unrelated to the movie because I'm both perplexed and super interested in your take on political correctness and comedy. Because I don't fully understand it. So because I was only
I
watching.
I probably don't either.
Well,
was this from like a couple of years ago?
It was from CBS. It wasn't that long. It was CBS.
It was
News,
before
but it was,
Trump. So it was only
3 minute clips. So I didn't get any of the context around it.
Sure. What did I say?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. So in general, you believe that political correctness is sometimes goes too far, but it's leaning in the right direction in coming out against bigotry or whatever it happens to mm-hmm. be. The person might be upset with at the time.
Sounds pretty good.
And so is that so your view post Donald Trump?
Oh, well, sure. It's probably exacerbated by that. Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, at least I had a sense that political, you know, anti-PC comedy, which for us, you know, was edgy comedy for a while, was quickly becoming like pretty lame.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like and it was also becoming the bread and butter of America when we're acting like Ted 2 and Deadpool are edgy when they're, you know, absolutely not. They're like culturally whatever. And then, you know, Trump proved it. I mean, Trump almost won the presidency by the anti-PC lessons he learned at the Comedy Central roast of himself. You know what I mean? It's just lame. And is it maybe going too far in certain areas? Yeah, sure. Will I take overly sensitive college students that don't like my comedy show over actual bigots burning things in the street? Yeah. Yeah, that's way preferable. Like, you know, irony deaf liberals or what? Not even liberal. You don't have to make it that. But irony deaf PC people are preferred mm-hmm. over bigoted anti-PC people. I had a feeling it was like, whatever. I mean,
well,
Trump's the, you know, the world's on fire. He's the worst thing that's ever happened to America. And the most American thing that's ever happened to America.
But you also stay away from political comedy, right? I mean, in a general sense, that's not what you're known for.
Right, but what is now political comedy when Donald Trump is our president? What is not political? I used to do jokes about reality television and celebrities. Well, now that's political. Everything's mm-hmm. political. This is political. Everything is now political because,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I went to the bathroom this morning. That's political now. I mean, truly.
Which bathroom did you use?
Well, yeah. It's you know, I have no idea. But like edgy, cool comedy right now is toothless to me and is almost meaningless.
What makes you laugh? What's the comedy that you watch and you don't find to be sort of lazy?
Silly,
or,
maybe yeah. silly. I don't know. I just can't like people like satirizing Trump and everything. Just it's meaning like doesn't make no sense to you. I'm saying like I don't get how you like go for like your hot political satire takes when the world is self-satirizing. Like, how do you make fun of this dude? Or how do you make fun of whatever? Who cares?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like silly stuff. And I rewatch Billy Madison. And I like that.
So do you view that mostly as sort of an escape from the, you know, the real world and what some comedies are trying to do? Because the only one I think who've done it successfully is Veep. HBO show. It's outstanding. It works as a satire. Now it worked as a satire, you know, six seasons ago.
Right.
But for the most part, even I look at it, regardless of sort
it
of
still works
opinions,
now post-Trump. Has there been a season post-Trump?
The last season was, yes, it was filmed okay. right when he, I think right. he actually was nominated. And then it was clear that he was an actual contender. And they struggled with that. They said to themselves, how do we do this in a post-Trump world? And I wonder, you know, pushing politics and worldviews aside,
yeah.
there's obviously a place for political humor and political satire. Just like, how do you do it?
Yeah, I don't know if there is. I don't know. I mean, there are a bunch of people going like, well, we need comedy more than ever now. And I'm like, ugh. Like, ew. Like, no, we don't. I don't know. I mean, right now, you're just catching me in a slightly cynical mood about this stuff. But, like, I don't know, man. I
feel like you're always cynical
on this
stuff.
They're thrilled. They're thrilled. I mean, you know, well, I got to be careful. Well, who cares? Stephen Colbert, they're thrilled. They're acting like they're not thrilled. All the ratings have went through the roof. All the political mm-hmm. satire people, they're... When we built a culture around satirizing things, then the culture becomes awful because we want to satirize it. We don't want the world – we don't want the government to work. If the president's normal, we have nothing to make fun of. So I think they're just as much a part of the problem. They've asked for this. Our commercials are ironic. Our culture yeah. is ironic. Our culture is about making – Twitter is a place where everyone can have their opinions about everything. So we gave them to have something an opinion of. We gave them something to have an opinion about all mm-hmm. of the time. Everyone's thrilled about Trump. Yeah. Twitter is through the roof. The stocks are through the roof. Colbert's number one. He overtook Fallon. Like, they're thrilled. Don't like they shouldn't act like they're you know, their ratings drop 100% if this goes away.
Well, and that's why I was originally a little perplexed by your position on political correctness, at least as I originally heard it, mostly because you've got a whole bunch of people who are upset with the president and they take issue with a number of things that I think they have a legitimate concern with. Sometimes it's a little bit overstated, but whatever it is, he clearly played off of that when he was running.
Mm.
And I think it helped him. And that PC culture, whatever we might consider the PC culture, I think it plays against the cause. And it feels like sometimes people don't see that. And I think Stephen Colbert is actually a really good example of that. He loves that he can make these jokes every single day, and so he does it, which then pisses off the people who aren't of that opinion, but then it provides an echo chamber to the people who are. And so nothing really changes other than the people who maybe take advantage of it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I could buy that. It is, though, still Donald Trump. So I can't get past there. I can't get past there. I can't lay the blame at the feet of anyone other than people that still voted for Donald Trump. I mean, are we kidding? Like 4 years ago, we all thought he was the worst person ever. We all were laughing at him. So, I mean, I don't know, whatever.
You're okay if Trump supporters go see Eighth Grade along with Hillary supporters?
Yeah.
Along with whomever.
Of course. I mean, like, I actually, what's nice about this movie is that this movie is actually like pre-political. It's actually existing for kids that like, so all my stupid stuff that I'll say, like, don't worry, it's not infused within this film. You know, it's happening pre all that, but you know, whatever. You know, I'm just saying, like, comedy is not that important. It's really not. There's the real important thing is just real people living actual lives. And that's what I hope this thing is that, like, it very quickly became a culture full of people mm-hmm. like me in privileged positions talking about politics and culture and everything. And hopefully this movie and other things are just a return to just, like, looking at each other as people in individual circumstances and not big, lofty conversations about the idea of things. Because when we only talk about each other in terms of the ideas of things, you know, we all get lost. So
then last question for Elsie. What'd you learn from all of this? What do you take away from this movie professionally, personally?
I don't know. Everyone's a weirdo. And life is weird and funny and not funny.
Well, perfect way to end it.
Hey, life is weird and funny enough. I agree with that.
Thank you.
That's a Twitter bio right there. Just put that in there.
It really is. It really is like one of those perfect little Carlos Williams balls. I saw the plums glistening and something like that.
Bo, Elsie, thanks for stopping by.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.